Blog Talk Radio.
You are now tuned in to the Bleed Blue Show. Here are your hosts, Steve Blair and Chris Miles.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Bleed Blue Show 4 for the fans. I'm your co-host, Steve, alongside Nick's First Take on Angel. We will be breaking down Knickerbocker basketball and also the NBA. Ain't nothing going on, you know, these days, the Bleed Blue way. 929-477-4171 is the calling number to the Bleed Blue Show. Press the number 1 on your touchtone phone if you want to be live on the air for any questions or comments. You can also listen to the show via the Skype. You can also follow the show on Twitter at the Bleed Blue Show. Myself, SB, First Amendment. Angel, what's going on? How you doing, man?
Not too bad, Steve. How you doing, man?
Man, it's just been crazy busy over here, man. Just crazy busy, man. Just trying to get all my ducks lined up in a row, man. How's everything with yourself, man?
Not too bad. You know, kind of quiet on, you know, on the Knickerbocker front. I mean, which is, you know, little side stories here and there, but, you know, nothing really on and popping in terms of, you know, trades and free agent signings and, you know, how's this team going to develop, you know, the team that we love so much.
Live and die with them, man. Live and die with them, man. Also, you can join the conversation via the text message or email right now from your cell phone, tablet, or personal computer. For scores, news, updates, and transactions, up-to-the-minute links for future broadcasts of the Bleed Blue Show, also known as the Blue Line, send an email request to varsitybleedblue@gmail.com. I want to give a shout-out always to the Orange and Blue Global, obglobal.net, that contains an archive of footage that stacks up to over 5 hours of the season. It's a full Knicks site of video, articles, discussions, YouTube channel, obglobal.net. Knicks fans unite, man. So, yeah, man, so what's the new trade rumor this week with the New York Knickerbockers, man? Who we trading now?
let's see. Well, I'm pretty sure everyone's heard it on social media and on probably on ESPN. I didn't see it there, but the latest trade was Phil Jackson was contacting Flip Saunders of the Minnesota Timberwolves. He tried to get into the Kevin Love deal. He offered Amari Stoudemire and his expiring contract along with Tim Hardaway Jr. and Iman Shumpert for Kevin Love, which eventually got rejected. And, you know, that's pretty much the only real one that we, you know, that's out there. And, you know, it's kind of a shame. I mean, it's kind of expected, but it's kind of a shame that, you know, Minnesota's, it doesn't look like they're going to be moving Love anytime soon, you know, at least not in the, you know, in the interim. But I'm pretty sure that, you know, by February, he will not be in a Minnesota Timberwolves uniform.
Now, why is that with Kevin Love, man? I mean, why are they unable to deal him more? Is it they're not able to find the deal right, that's right for him? Or what's your thoughts about this whole Kevin Love back and forth between all these teams that are inquiring about it?
Well, I think what it is that Minnesota doesn't they have a specific, you know, desire and want the need in terms of trying to trade their superstar. And at the same time, Flip Saunders believes that, you know, if anybody can convince Kevin Love to stay, it'd be him. Because the system will, you know, Flip Saunders is coming back on the bench. So he's going to be a brand new coach with a brand new system, even though he's been the president of the GM for like the last couple of years now. But, you know, he figures he can, you know, try to convince Love, if anything. But on the other hand, if Love is so determined of, you know, leaving Minnesota and joining a contending team, i.e. the Chicago Bulls or the Cleveland Cavaliers, you know, they're going to make sure that they get the price that they want. They basically want to do what Denver did to us when we went for Melo. They want to rob us blind, get as many assets as humanly possible. But the problem is that, you know, the Cleveland package of Andrew Wiggins, Anthony Bennett, and another first-round pick, it's a lot of question marks. You know, Cleveland has, you know, given they have the two number one picks of the last two drafts, but Anthony Bennett has, I don't even feel he's even played a single lick, you know, since he's been drafted. And Andrew Wiggins, you know, as much potential as he has, it's still potential. It's not definitive. So that's the problem on the Cleveland Cavaliers front. For the Chicago Bulls front, it's really interesting because they're talking about trading for for love in exchange for Taj Gibson, Jimmy Butler, the European cat Mirotić, and maybe another first round pick. But it's like, okay, you're not really as much as established as those guys are, and as much of a benefit that Minnesota will get from them, it still doesn't really fill the void of, you know, what you're going to lose when you get, you know, Kevin Love. And that's the problem with, you know, with Minnesota. They know they're losing their superstar, and they kind of want a superstar in return, but no one's giving that up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, with this Kevin Love situation, man. So when he becomes a free agent, man, it's going to be wide open. He's going to get max money. It's just a matter of what team you think is going to be in the run for Kevin Love a year from now.
Well, that's the interesting part, because we all know the Knicks will have salary cap space. And, you know, they have Carmelo Anthony, so you already have the star. So basically you have to run this like you run, like you're going for LeBron. I'm not saying that Kevin Love and LeBron aren't in the same class, but that's kind of how you have to approach it. You know, you need to have an established star, you need to be in a big market, and you need to be in a championship contending mode. And, you know, the Knicks would probably be in those talks, especially, you know, being in the triangle offense. Love would definitely flourish, and being alongside Carmelo Anthony, a proven scorer, with a system that's being run by a 13-time world champion, and a, you know, as a president of basketball operations and a 5-time world champion as the head coach, I mean, that's going to be very intriguing. Cleveland will have the salary cap space, I believe, because, you know, LeBron only signed a 2-year deal, which is a one guaranteed and one player option. So they will have the salary cap space. I'm not sure how Chicago fits into that, because, you know, with them amnestying Carlos Boozer and signing Pau Gasol, I don't know how all that pans out. I need to check on all those contract figures, but. Also, the Lakers, they're always going to be, you know, they're freeing up their cap space because, you know, Nash comes with the books. I'm pretty sure Dallas will probably get involved in that somehow. Who knows? I'm pretty sure the Miami Heat won't get involved, but you never know. You never know with Pat Riley anymore.
Yeah, I don't know about Pat with that. I mean, you might as well say Miami's a destination now, you know, the land love. You know, I think those teams that, as you said, you know, I think going to California makes a lot of sense for Kevin Love, knowing he's from that area. But I don't know. It's a wait and see again, man. You know, if he was to be traded, man, I don't know, man. Like, it's still a lot of time left before, you know, training camp and all that. So it's just a matter of time of what they're going to do with that. Do you think you can see him in the New York Knicks?
Under the right circumstances, it's possible. I know that Minnesota is already looking towards the future and thinking about planning how they're going to, you know, recover from losing Kevin Love. And they're talking about replacing him with Thaddeus Young of the Philadelphia 76ers. Now, I know I mentioned it to you before, and I mentioned it to a few other friends. Thaddeus Young was being offered to the Knicks in exchange for Amari Stoudemire. Now, if you put two and two together here, if Amari Stoudemire, you know, was being offered in the Minnesota trade, which got rejected, but Philadelphia is willing to take him, and Minnesota wants Thaddeus Young, could the Knicks eventually, you know, work in conjunction with the Philadelphia 76ers and the Minnesota Timberwolves in order to work a three-team trade out in which Kevin Love ends up playing at the Garden, Amari plays in Philadelphia, and Thaddeus Young ends up in Minnesota, and everybody wins. Plus, you know, whatever draft picks that Philadelphia still has, you know, they're going to be lottery picks because, you know, they're still in rebuilding mode. That's been their go-to thing for the last 3 or 4 years. That's why they are currently are opposed to the new draft system being implemented or ever changing, because their rebuilding plan is a 3 or 4 year plan that, you know, that is basically based off of their current lottery system. So that's what they're, you know, that's why things are the way they are. But if Phil can, you know, talk to Philadelphia and Minnesota and see if they can work a trade out, I mean, I would love for Kevin Love to be, you know, for the Knicks to end up with Kevin Love, you know, for two reasons. One, he's a great scorer, and you know, and he's a great player. But two, you kind of keep him away from Cleveland and from them developing the super team that LeBron got away from and now is trying to rebuild in Cleveland.
True that. Now, Thaddeus Young's making almost $10 million on the books for next season.
Exactly.
So, oh, actually, 2014. Okay, $9.5 million. It'll be ten the following season. That's not a bad contract for that guy.
It's not a bad one at all. It actually, you know, works out for you know for them because you know Minnesota would be looking at next season, and I think I read this somewhere that they're looking into re-signing Ricky Rubio to a max deal. Similar to how Steph Curry got his max deal from Golden State.
Oh, he said Ricky Rubio for a max deal? No,
that's what they're hoping to do. I'm not saying it's smart. I'm just saying. I don't think he's worth that, you know, a max deal. But it would be like a rookie max deal. So it, you know, it wouldn't be a $400 million. It'd be like less than 90. You know, because he's only been in the league a few years.
That's why they're Minnesota, right?
And that's why they're the Timberwolves. And I think they have, what, two playoff appearances in their whole history, if any?
Yeah, I mean, I remember the furthest they ever gotten was pretty much, I think, the 2001 Western Conference Finals. That's that team
probably.
They had, I think it was Cassell.
Didn't they have Garnett and Marbury at the time? Or was that like a little bit after that?
A little bit after. It was a little bit after. But nonetheless, but that's why Minnesota Timberwolves are the Minnesota Timberwolves. If you're going to get Ricky Rubio that kind of money, man, you deserve to suck, especially in the West, man. Yeah, man, so I guess that's the situation with Kevin Love, man. New York Knickerbocker basketball, man. I mean, it's kind of quiet right now. I know there's nothing but trade rumors and all that. Mr. Iman Shumpert, man, your thoughts, man, his name in the trade rumors?
I'm not surprised that you're hearing it. You're hearing Iman being thrown out. I was actually very shocked to hear that, you know, he included Tim Hardaway Jr. Because I was always under the assumption that Melo and Hardaway were the untouchables. You know, those are the two pieces that you were destined to not want to get rid of under any circumstances. One, because Melo, you just resigned. And you can't trade him anyway. But Tim Hardaway Jr., he's your future. And you know, everybody, you know, is really high up on the kid. So me hearing that Hardaway was being offered, I mean, that was almost like a desperate ploy for Phil to say, hey, you know, I really want this guy. I'm willing to give you my best, you know, young guy here. But, you know, at this point, you know, if you're trying to acquire another star, you kind of have to, you know, look into trading Tim Hardaway Jr. Iman, as much as everybody likes him and as much as everyone, you know, loves his, you know, his defensive, you know, energy and his presence and his spark, but the fact of the matter is that his offensive inefficiency is, you know, a major concern, you know, for this team and especially in this offense. You know, if he's laying up bricks, then it's not going to work. And basically we're going to, you know, you're only going to discourage the flow of offense, and you're going to end up with doing ISO Melo. It's just going to happen that way.
Yeah. Now, with Iman Shumpert, man, let me ask you as far as his defense, in my opinion, has not been the same since year one. I mean, ball hawk. Ball hawk all day, then he had a terrible injury during the playoffs versus Miami. But, you know, I think some of his play, I really don't want to make excuses for players, man. I like Shumpert, man. But, you know, with Woodson, I think Woodson sucked so bad as a coach, man. I just think that, you know, trade rumors since last summer, since the summer league, and they not playing in that. I think with a new regime, he may bounce back, is what I'm saying. I think he's going to be bounced back to a player that we expect him to be as a Knicks fan, you know, so as Knicks fans. It has no choice but to improve. I can't see it getting any worse, you know.
Well,
the defense, and to be quite honest with you, and maybe that's part of the Woodson system with the switching crap, but I can see why his defense sucked last year because I don't think he put his ball in with Woodson. You can just tell on the court, you know what I'm saying? The team didn't play with no energy. Like, it's like they milled it in. So I'm kind of giving him a pass, and I don't want to, but you still got to play. But I think he'll, knowing that Phil and Derek Fisher on there and Kurt Rambis and all those guys on the staff, I just think that he's going to play better. There's no way but to go up.
I agree with you to a certain degree. I mean, we've seen the videos of Iman, you know, really, you know, working out in the gym, playing in these little summer, these little pickup games and summer leagues and stuff. You know, he's been tweeting that out a lot. The fact is that this is technically a contract year. Next year, you know, he does have the qualifying offer. I think it's like $3-something million, and you know, if he doesn't have to take it, so technically he's almost like a restricted free agent next year. And who knows if another team out there, you know, is willing to, you know, to pay him just a little bit over $4 million, and the Knicks feel that, you know, that's not enough, you know, he's not worth it, then by all means, you know, I'm pretty sure he's going to try to, you know, shoot for that $4, $5, maybe $6 million deal that, you know, from another team, because it looks like the Knicks, I'm pretty sure the Knicks are not going to match any offer for him that's, you know, of any comparison. I just don't see it. Not for a guy like that. Not for a guy who's that offensively inefficient or inconsistent. Because he has a great...
Do you think his offense can improve with the new regime? I mean, I agree with you. It sucks so bad, but I'm with you on that.
It can improve because now the system will allow him to have some open looks. But because of the logjam and the amount of two guards that we have currently right now between, you know, Iman, JR, Tim Hardaway Jr., and then, you know, you got Ellington at the same time. You know, you're going to have to find time to play Larkin, Prigioni, Calderon. I mean, that backcourt is so loaded right now. So playing time would be an issue. I'm pretty sure he's going to get his minutes, but playing time is going to be an issue. And so him being the odd man out or JR being the odd man out, you know, it's to be expected at this point.
Now, that logic, now the only way that the logic is going to work and that's if the Knicks go small, if that's, you know, like we said on a couple of last shows, and that's when we were hearing about Phil playing Amari at center. I mean, there's still minutes to be had on this roster, you know? I mean, as far as if they're playing a small lineup, you know, foul trouble and all, it means the Nets and all that. So I just think that, I mean, he still can show his, you know, his skill set and be part of the rotation, I believe. You know, I don't think – I mean, sometimes I always get back into the old habits because of how we grew up in the old NBA because it seemed like it was like, you know, you had the point guard, you had the shooting guard, small forward, power forward, center. But this NBA, the lineups, they kind of really don't care about that. I mean, yeah, you have your position players and whatnot. Sometimes the coaches, they just throw the best five out there and just go ahead and get it, man. You know what I'm saying? Do you hear what I'm saying as far as that?
It's kind of taken a little bit of a street ball mentality, almost like a high school basketball team mentality where, I mean, the tallest, you know, the biggest guy on the court can be the one bringing the ball down the court. I mean, for all intents and purposes, I mean, for a while, and I always attribute Tim Duncan to being, you know, probably the pioneer in this, you know, a 7-foot power forward who can dribble and was playing like a point guard at times. You know, remember back when he was in Wake Forest and from, you know, the first 3 or 4 years in the league, that's what he was doing. He was almost like a point guard for a while. And then, you know, he can easily just transition into that four spot. And then, you know, of course, when, you know, David Robinson would have to, you know, come out, he can, you know, slide over to the five, come back to the four. I mean, he pretty much did it all. He had all those intangibles back then. I mean, he still does now, but, you know, age has definitely caught up to him. But
yeah, that's not fair. You're right, man. Him going to that team was not fair, man. You're right, man. He could play the basketball. You know, he could dribble the rock. He could, you know, face you up 12 to 15 feet, hit go off glass, jump hooks. Yeah, that's not fair, man.
I still have nightmares from that 99 season. Dude, that 99 finals was bad.
I mean, that's if you expected to win, though. I mean, we were such an underdog in that series. I mean, I was just glad to even make it because we weren't even supposed to make it that far. But even though it was a shortened season, but, you know.
Right, but, you know, deep down, even though we were the underdogs and everything, it's like the best way to cap off that, you know, the underdog season was to win the title and to do it without Patrick, to do it, you know, in our home, on our home court against all odds, being the first number 8 seed in history to win the NBA championship. I mean, that would have, even though it's a strike-shortened season, there is no other team in the history of the NBA can sit, you know, can lay claim to the biggest underdog story in all of the NBA history. Yeah, flat out.
But 94 was more painful for myself, man. I mean, at least we were up in that one hurt too.
That one hurt really bad.
We could have won that one. More realistically, the Spurs, I just felt they were just better, man. You know, they were too big, and Duncan was just a rookie. Or not even a rookie. He may have been a rookie the second year.
No, he was like a second or third year.
Okay, yeah. So it was something like that. They were just too much. They had too much youth. They had a mix of They had everything, man. They had a solid point guard that was going to play defense. They had, you know, pretty much a Hall of Fame center. You know, you got two Hall of Fame centers if you want to count Duncan. And, you know, they just had a good team, man. As far as the Knicks, man, I'm not, you know, I was proud of those boys. But, you know, I thought they, to get that far the way they did, man, that was kind of like what the Rangers did in hockey this year, man. The way they just rallied the, you know, the squad and just went as far as they did. They weren't supposed to get as far as they did on the hockey level, but as far as basketball, man, I was proud of that team. Now, let's see, what was up with this point guard situation again with Prigioni? I heard a little bit about him. I read some articles on Prigioni and how he thinks they're going to have a bounce back season. And I'm thinking, man, him and Calderon, you know, in the rotation, man. I know we kind of talked about it last week, who you want, you know, Shane Larkin and all that. But I really like this kid Larkin, man. I think a lot of us do, man. And I think that's a, you don't think that's such a log jam at the point guard position, too?
To some degree, yes. To some degree, no. Because with the point guard situation, you can still bench Larkin. Or you don't expect Prigioni to play all 82 games, or you know you could always log minutes for all three of these guys. At the same time, I mean, yeah, we're spelling out all these names, you know, that the Knicks currently have on their roster and under contract. But the fact of the matter is that you're only going to play about 8 or 9 of them, you know, 8 at the most. So, you know. I don't know. I'm looking at Derek Fisher's rotation, you know, to look like, of course, the starting five would probably be Calderon with J.R. Smith, Carmelo Anthony, Amari Stoudemire, and, you know, for all intents and purposes, Andrea Bargnani. You know, and then, you know, the first three off the bench are going to probably be Iman Shumpert, Tim Hardaway Jr., and probably Jason Smith. In terms of, and then, you know, you're probably sneaking a Klee Anthony early in there somewhere too, but that's pretty much it. Everybody else is going to probably be like, you know, the 10th, 11th, 12th man, you know, that only play garbage minutes or play, you know, very sparingly just because the rotations is going to be, you know, very consistent, fit, you know, they will be having a lot of those small lineups like, you know, like you alluded to earlier. And I don't know. I don't think we have that really big problem in terms of in the point guard situation as much as we do with the shooting guard, because in the shooting guard position, we have a lot of good. The big difference between our two guard problem and our point guard problem is simply is that on the two guard problem, we have a lot of talent and they all demand minutes.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I mean, that's a problem that most teams want to have, but in terms of, you know, as opposed to the front line, you know, and I alluded to this last week, is that I have a problem with who's going to be playing the five.
Why say that?
Because who's going to play the five? Because if I don't feel 100% comfortable with Andrea Bargnani, I don't know if Jason Smith's injuries and Bargnani's injuries are going to be, you know, a factor come next season. You know, no one even knows yet what Phil's going to do with Sam Dallenberg. I mean, I haven't heard a thing about that. So far, he's still not even picked up for this season.
Mm-hmm.
it's just, you know, an interesting situation of, you know, who's going to play the five, who's going to play the four, and if, you know, if you're going to play Amari at the five, well, then does that mean you're playing Melo at the four? Who's his backup? You know, Cle Anthony Early is not a power forward, not by any stretch of imagination.
Could you throw
Bargnani
at the four if he did that?
To back him up, more than likely.
I mean, you know,
if not, it'd be Stoudemire.
Exactly what you said about the street ball thing. Does it really matter who plays center? Just throw five dudes out there and just do it.
Well,
it does
because the Eastern Conference, even though it's so much less than the Western Conference, but it is a whole lot more wide open, and you know you're going to be dealing with teams like Chicago. You know, who have Joakim Noah, and now they have Pau Gasol, and they have Taj Gibson. So you have to match size and strength with them a little bit. You know, Miami still has, you know, Udonis Haslem and Chris Bosh. You know, they're not exactly a pushover team anymore, you know, like, you know, nowadays. I mean, they're still a pretty good team. Cleveland is going to have LeBron. They're going to have, and you know, they're going to have that dynamic front court, which makes their, their dynamic back court, which makes their front court just scary. Because you know you're going to be focused so much on their back court, you know, on Kyrie Irving and all those guys. It's just going to be a headache.
Yeah.
And then of course, you know, you still got Washington and all the big boys they have there. Gortat, Nene, it's just, you know, so they kind of have to, you know, match size and strength and, you know, just to, you know, keep up with them a little bit unless, you know, they play that high-tempo, consistent triangle offense, which, you know, you're going to have to expect that it's not going to happen every night. And there are going to be some nights where they're going to mail it in, they're going to get blown out, and we're going to be like, okay, we're just going to forget this game ever happened. We're about to have at least two of those a year.
What? I hope not, man. You don't think they put it on the roster on the court? Do you think we're going to get smoked a few games of the year? I really want to be real biased. I really want to be a homer on this, but yo, I really think that I think these guys will come in prepared, man. I think these guys will come in mentally focused, man. I just think that all that stuff we were seeing last year, man, is all a reflection of that. That idiot head coach of ours, man. So I think this team's gonna be ready to play, man, and night in and night out. You know, like I said, yeah, we'll see. And I feel you where you're coming from as far as the centers from the other teams in the East. Oh, you're spot on about that.
Yeah, I mean, do I think that, you know, that they're gonna be more ready for it? I think they will, because you have to think about it. Most of these guys, you know, are all on their contract years. You know, they all want to make an impression on Phil. You know, because I think everyone sees the writing on the wall. They see that Phil is trying to build a championship, and more often than not, within 3 to 5 years, it's going to happen. You know, if not, maybe a little bit longer. But it, you know, it's bound to happen that the New York Knicks do win an NBA championship. When? Who knows? I'm not counting it on this year. It's, you know, just because the Western Conference is just so deep right now, it's hard to say that anybody in the East will win. But I think everybody, you know, all the players on the team, kind of realize that hey, Phil's here and he's making changes, and I don't want to be dealt. I want to go along with the ride. You know, like we said before, Iman Shumpert is going to have his qualifying offer. You know, J.R. Smith has his player option. Amari Stoudemire and Andrea Bargnani, these are the final years of their contracts. It's going to be interesting to see how those guys react, or, you know, are they basically going to mail it in and, you know, they get dealt with later.
True that. So, yeah, man, as far as the New York Knicks, man, it's been real quiet right now. You know, we could talk a little general NBA stuff, too. Did you hear about the dudes? I mean, I'm not surprised as far as what they thought about the Christmas Day game. I mean, it's going to be like six games anyway, but the marquee game with the Cleveland at Miami.
I did hear that.
I'm not surprised. I've seen that coming.
Well, right, but I find it very interesting on how that whole thing just got arranged. All of a sudden, well, then again, the schedule's not even out yet, so you knew that that they were probably looking at, all right, what's going to be the big marquee games coming, you know, come Christmas, come Thanksgiving, come, you know, such and such time. But it's going to be interesting. You know, LeBron James going back to Miami in a Cleveland uniform, wearing 23 again.
That's going to get killer ratings, man. That's going to get killer ratings, yo.
Right. But all right, here, let me ask you this.
All right.
When LeBron left Cleveland and went to Miami and also gave us the finger in the process, how did you feel about LeBron before, during, and after?
Before, I thought he was a dude that I like watching him play. I mean, I like watching him play anyway, regardless of the team. I thought he was a dude that I liked his game. I thought he's very transparent. He was definitely the next superstar in line after Kobe. I really had no real beef with LeBron, you know, in the Cleveland Cavalier jersey, which, you know, any Knicks fan would tell you, you know, I can't stand the Miami Heat. I hate the Miami Heat.
Right.
So when he went, and I was down there, too. I was down in Florida with all that I was having, you know, for, you know, family function. I was down there in South Florida when he flew down there for the pet rally crap. Man, I can't. I really wanted. I hope that dude was going to like, you know, stink up the joint. But going back to Cleveland, man, I was kind of like, I just hate the Miami Heat. It's not even more about hating him. It was just more, I just can't stand the Heat. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Then when he lost that first finals, I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. I loved every bit of it. But then he went and beat two better teams, in my opinion. I felt that the Thunder and the Spurs were better teams than the Mavs, so that sucked. You know, and as Knicks fans, we want a chip. And to watch a team like this bandwagon fan base get awarded back-to-back chips, that kind of sucks. You know what I'm saying? You know, I'm still kind of furious about that. But there's no more chips in the near future. Bank on that. But as far as him being back on Cleveland, all right, I think it's a good story. And I think, you know, when he had to read the letter and all that, I think that he kind of equates that to going away to college. And it makes perfect sense. I mean, if you're from the same area all your life, you know, I mean, of course he traveled the world as a professional athlete, Olympics and all that. But, you know, getting away as far as 4 years, man, he kind of treated it like college. I can understand that. So, yeah, no gripes against the dude. What about you, man?
I'm going to quote Chris Miles on this one. He wasn't a Knick, so fuck him.
Yeah.
Before he left, when he was a Cleveland Cavalier, you know, it was the feel-good story. I didn't really have, the animosity towards him, you know, kind of like how you felt. You know, he was fun to watch. You know, you were always hoping to see how long it would take him to win the championship in Cleveland, and, you know, that never materialized. I'll be the first one to admit, you know, when the talk of him coming to New York was being rampant, I was on that wagon. I was really hoping for it. I mean, I was praying for it. And when that didn't happen and he said he was taking his talents to South Beach, I felt like, you know, first, like he kicked me in the nuts, and then I just started just throwing shit. It's like, dude, really? Any place but the Miami Heat. My feeling was, like, any place but the Miami Heat and the Chicago Bulls. Just because the Miami Heat,
you
know.
Who do you hate more as a Knicks fan?
Sorry?
Who do you hate more? Let me go back to your LeBron point. I gotta get that question out.
I think I hate the Miami Heat more.
Good man.
Definitely hate the Miami Heat more. However, the only reason I was saying not the Chicago Bulls, because they have they have two dynasties to live off of when Michael Jordan was there. We ain't got that one.
Nah.
Now, people, I have friends in Chicago that say, well, you have the Yankee dynasty. So, yeah, but that's baseball.
Yeah, that's baseball, man. I'm talking about basketball, man.
Exactly. And they'll tell me, and I can always argue, say, hey, your White Sox won a title in this millennium.
In 05,
like, so
yeah.
So, you know, where's our title in the millennium? It's not an even trade here. You're not even in the slightest bit.
Uh-huh.
So, I definitely feel LeBron going back to Cleveland, yeah, it's a nice story. It's a feel-good story. But at the same time, I look at the situation, and I'm kind of, like, scratching my head. It's like, why do I give a fuck? He ain't a Nick. So fuck him.
Okay, true. I get that angle. I understand that angle. Now, you know, you're right about Chicago, though. You're spot on about Chicago. See, my thing with Chicago, I respect them, though. I don't respect Miami. I don't get it. It's crazy how I look at that.
Oh, no, I'm with you on that one, because at least in Chicago, you know, you can tell that there's real diehards there. You know, so you always respect the fans of a diehard fan base. You may not like them, but you respect them. You know, in Miami, you can never, like, have that respect for them, because no matter whether their team is good or they're bad, and I'm pretty sure, you know, anybody who's listened to talk radio or you know, has watched ESPN and has seen anybody talk about the Miami fans. And heck, we went in on them, you know, last week. Miami fans, you know, good or bad, they're not there till midway through the second quarter, if that already when the first half is over.
Yep.
You know, not like, you know, every other city. Guys are there, you know, 2 hours before tip off. You know, they in there, they're getting their freaking, they're getting their popcorn, they're getting their soda, they're getting their couple of beers in there, they're getting comfortable, taking pictures, you know, and then the game starts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Miami don't do that.
No. Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
So it makes it really interesting that, you know, that he chose that franchise and that city when we all looking at, when the whole world is probably looking at them like, they don't deserve him. You know, say what you will about him, they didn't deserve him.
Yeah, I totally agree, man. I couldn't even say any better than what you just said, man.
They don't deserve the last 4 years. Given they only won two titles, they don't even deserve to be in the conversation of four NBA finals.
For me, I'll say, as far as ranking the hate, it'd probably definitely be Heat, Pacers, Bulls in that order. Heat, Pacers, and Bulls.
I don't really hate the Pacers. I look at them as, you know, as one of our biggest rivals. Same thing with Chicago. I think I hate Boston more than anybody.
I'm a Knicks fan. I know my old man did. A lot of older Knicks fans, they hated Boston. I really wasn't the one that to really not hate on Boston like that. As far as the basketball team, now the baseball team is a whole different animal. But for some reason,
well, yeah.
I mean, I had a general dislike for the Celtics, but it was just never there for me, you know. So almost similar to the Nets, the Brooklyn Nets, you know.
See, I don't really hate the Nets. I hate their fans. I don't hate them. Their fans are really what annoy me. But in regards to, you know, teams that I hate, you know, Miami would definitely be number one. Boston, to me, would be, like, the number two in basketball.
Yeah.
In baseball, they're definitely they're number one. But
right.
In basketball,
oh,
they're
man.
My number two. And my number three, and this is maybe just for my own personal, it would be the Lakers. And
yeah.
I respect their fan base, but, again, fuck them. They're not the Knicks.
True that. There's a popular story going on right now with Stephen A. Smith being suspended from ESPN. I know that, you know, we're jumping ship, you know, we'll get back into basketball. But what is your quick thoughts about that? I mean, you know, supposedly the Knicks fan, but every time, you know, we talk, you hear the guy talk, and he's always ripping the Knicks. I hate that about that dude, but what's your thoughts about that, man?
Well, Stephen A. Smith, he is he claims to be a diehard New York Knicks fan, and I believe him. I truly believe that he is a diehard Knicks fan. I think what it is that, you know, he's like us. You know, it's been so long since we've won a championship and since we were respectable and you know, of any kind of relevance that,
yeah.
it's hard to not be angry or not be so upset about the performances that this team has been doing. Now, his situation, can I just say, let me just say that in what, it's like, what in the world is the world coming to when a man can't speak his own mind, his own opinion, without having it being dissected for every single syllable and word? Because everything that Stephen A. Smith, when he was discussing and going through a little, you know, his little harangue about the Ray Rice situation, about domestic violence and domestic disputes, what he said was true, was factual, was everything that's a, you know, that any man in that situation was thinking and feeling. Now you have one woman who happens to be a colleague of his, and then every woman who's ever listened or heard bits and pieces of what Stephen A. Smith said and then reacted the way that they did in such a way that it caused him to get suspended from his job without pay. People need to grow the fuck up. I'm sorry for using that language, but they need to grow the hell up.
I'm still trying what to find where he said to really get suspended. I haven't watched a lot of television in the last week, and when I heard it, I said, "This is what they're talking about." But go ahead and continue your point, bro. You're doing well.
My point is that Stephen A. Smith, what he said was that women in those situations need to do their best to not provoke the situation. What is wrong with that statement? I mean, I'm only paraphrasing, but what is wrong with that statement? My point to you is that anyone who's ever been in a domestic violence situation, yes, of course, not everyone's going to be able to understand because every situation is different. And yes, I understand that, you know, I'm a man and I'll never understand it because I'm always on this one side and all women are going to be on that side. But the fact of the matter is that what he said wasn't wrong, wasn't offensive, wasn't anything. Take the fact that, you know, that it's not a man-woman thing. Take that part out. Let's make it a man versus man thing. If one party provokes the other party to get his ass whooped, what would be the major consensus of society? What would they say? Well, he deserved it. He shouldn't have been doing this. He shouldn't have been doing that.
Absolutely.
True or not true? But because it's a man and a woman thing, all of a sudden, you know, it's a big problem. And then, of course, so then society is attacking him, saying that, you know, that no woman deserves that. No, we're not saying no woman does. No woman deserves to get her ass beat. No person deserves to be beaten to a bloody pulp in any way, shape, or form. However, if you are the one who is provoking it, or is insinuating it, or is trying to, you know, elicit that kind of reaction, then by all means, you reap what you sow. But I digress.
Well said. I don't even know if I even can even expand on what you just said, man. It's just, it's common sense. It's pretty much you treat others how you want to be treated, and everybody has their own different value system. But there's nothing wrong with what you just said as far as backing up the points what Stephen A. Smith said on air. And I think what it came down to is I think media and society wanted to, you know, hand it to him. Because I've never heard, you know, I've been hearing this guy, you know, in the media for almost 2 decades now. And with him, it seems that, you know, he gets away. I wouldn't say he gets away with. He's very, very opinionated. I think he says a lot of things that make a lot of sense. And I think this was one way to humble him. And I never heard him sound humble until the other day. I don't know if you saw the show.
When he apologized?
He had the pre-recorded apology. I never heard him say that. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And don't get me wrong. Anyone who is anyone can appreciate him doing that. Because at the same time, he also knows that, well, look, he works for this major multimedia conglomerate known as Disney. So he has children, women, and all kinds of, people within his own fan base. And, of course, he's on the radio every day, and, he's on SportsCenter almost every other day with news and highlights. And he's a big social figure, in his own community and outside of television. So I understand that he, was either inclined or forced or felt, regardless of what was his reason, I understand that he felt he had to do this. Do I necessarily think that he needed to do it? No. Because he said that on a sports opinion talk show. If that's his opinion, who cares how politically correct it is? The whole show is called First Take. It's based on the opinions of a world-renowned, columnist and journalist and talk show host, and basically it's a black versus white thing almost. Even though they're boys, but it's like a black man's perspective, a white man's perspective. That's what it is, based on opinion. Just because it's an unpopular one, everybody wants to, jump on that bandwagon and say, well, no, see, you shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry. His opinion is what makes him who he is.
Well said. What's up, Hollis? I was Queeping in the building.
Gentlemen, how you doing?
Welcome back.
Oh, my God. Is this the Mr. Miles?
What's up? Hey, man.
Man, in the building. What up, brother?
Hey, I'm here. That's all. Hey, look, first of all, let me do a public service announcement here. Gentlemen, get your prostate and your colons checked if you haven't already, because you'll have to pay for it dearly later on, trust me.
Oh, wow.
You can write that. That's my PSA, and this is a sports show, so I'm not going to go any further than that. But trust me, it is really, really good advice I'm giving you. Okay, your family will appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Listen, Stephen A., my homie. But based on what I just heard, who's on anyway? Who's all on right now?
It's just me and Angel.
That's all? Just you two?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good conversation then. Hey, look, Angel, man, I'm 1,000% running with you on this one here. This country has gotten overprotective, man. Everything is sensitive. You can't say this about this. You can't say this about that. You can't say anything about gay. You can't say anything about battered woman. You can't say anything about crossing the prison street. You can't say anything, And that's the real crime here. What did he say? Nothing. What did he say? He voiced an opinion on an opinionated show where there is a panel. That's what those places are there for. So you can give an expert maybe it's not a total sports-related topic, but you're there to give an opinion. You're right. The show's called First Take. It's not First Down, or it's not, first censor. It's First Take, and I couldn't agree with you more. But, that's just a macrocosm of what's happening in the whole nation, man, and probably beyond that. I'm a political brother, and I'm on a lot of forums and a lot of councils and I participate a lot in a lot of things this way. And everything, the world has gone completely quote unquote PC. Watch how you say it in front of this crowd. Make sure you don't offend these folks. Make sure you don't offend that. But see, what is free speech for? What's the premise of it? Now you can't. Now they're telling you you have the right to say whatever you want to say as long as you don't say it the way we don't like for you to say it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's yep. and that's the problem here. And it's just it is only getting worse. Now, I understand there's some people that are upset and are really sensitive and their ears to the floor on this subject. And I'm sorry about that, especially if they've had any tragedy of a personal nature that hit kind of home and what have you. But again, you know, this is America, dude. Okay? And if the premise of America is freedom and the freedom to express, the freedom to say, the freedom to ignite, the freedom to quarry, the freedom to debate, then who the fuck cares? Let them say what you want to say and be out of it. That's it. And to me, what did he say? Nothing.
Nothing.
And for that, he got, what, I think half the sentence that Ray Rice got.
That's crazy.
You know? So I don't understand the point. I don't understand the point, you know?
I guess what it is, and Chris, I agree with you. Everything you just said, dude. It's like I'm feeling like, damn, I said something right here. But to be honest with you, man, this is the way I feel. It's like basically what ended up happening was, is that America was acting like a little. I'm not gonna say the B word.
No, yeah, you go ahead and say it.
Only heard what little bits and pieces. They heard, picked up a few key words, and reacted. And that's what ended up happening. They heard the word provoke, and they automatically assumed that he was either A, accusing Ray Rice's fiance as the as being provoking him, which we don't know whether she did or not, or B, that whatever she got, she had coming to her, which we don't know, but he is speaking on the overall consensus of what happened. I mean, I'm born and raised in New York City. We all grew up in the hood. We've all seen domestic disputes in one way, shape, or form, whether it's firsthand, secondhand, or we just see it on the street. How many times have we seen where guys and girls are arguing and fighting, and the girl is the one provoking it? I mean, we see that all the time, don't we? Sometimes the girl is the loudest one and the bulliest one. It happens.
That's right.
So, I mean, he is speaking from a firsthand knowledge. And yes, in his apology, he talked about how his mom and his sisters, they all, in some way, shape, or form, have dealt with domestic violence. And yes, he probably should have known a little better in terms of. Just how to approach the subject.
Right.
But whatever he said, regardless of how he approached it or not, whatever he said was not, in my opinion, was not worth his suspension. It didn't even need an elicited apology for me. To me, hey, if you didn't like what he said, change the damn channel.
You know what? What he should have done, actually, is something that he's famous for. He should have prefaced it. He should have said,
Oh, no, he prefaces like 300 times. He prefaces everything. Oh, he prefaces everything. Anytime he speaks, that's how he prefaces everything.
He does. But I missed the preface this time, And if he had just done that a little bit, you know what? Forget that. He didn't do anything wrong. Let me just skip past that, right? To me, is that what he said? It's not a big thing, but unfortunately, this is now a country where if you say, for instance, Tim Hardaway about 4 years ago said something like, hey, nah, I hate gay people, man. And they lit into his ass. I'm talking about beyond the sports media. The GLAAD Commission jumped on him. The friggin' the Civil Liberties Union jumped on him. Everybody leaped on him as if he was the biggest pariah this side of Rush Limbaugh, man. But see, and I had no problem with it at first, but then I realized after the third day, did anybody ask him what he meant? No, you didn't.
No.
You just leaped out, formed an opinion, and dogged him out, you know? Now, if you don't like domestic violence and you're part of a coalition that really is for the demeaning of these kinds of acts, then, hey, you know, go join your goddamn local chapter and voice your opinion. Don't jump on the goddamn sports dude, you know. He's on a sports panel. That's it. That's no more, no less. He didn't say I'm down with Bin Laden, you know. He didn't say, oh, fuck that bitch. She got what she deserved. He didn't say that. He formed an opinion, which was, to me, a correct analysis of what really goes on in a relationship. Okay? This thing, I've had, you know what, aside from sports, I haven't argued this point many times. I'm talking about going back 20 years, dude.
Go for it.
And I had an argument with... It was an argument, and normally I don't call them arguments. I call them discussions, you know. And I had a
heated
real
debate
with a bunch of women one time in a church about this no means no thing, you know, because their interpretation of it was, hey, I could be butt naked, standing dead over you, and no means no. And I'm like, that's not even human nature. See, you're provoking the man to do something, act out, and he's got to go to jail because your ass is supposed to be a thief. Well, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not civil rights. That's fucking putting your titties in the guy's face and fucking him up.
That's plain dumb.
You know, so this is to me a not so distant cousin from that incident. You know, Stephen A. formed an opinion. Well. On an opinionated show where he's paid to give an opinion and people ask for his opinion and he was asked for his opinion and people waited for his opinion and he got slam-basted for it. Now, he's got money, he's set, he does real well, you know, but I know this stung the shit out of him because there's other internal things happening here. Now this puts him in the category of that idiot that made those comments about RG3 a couple of years ago. You know, on his show. You know, now he's in the situation that Rush Limbaugh was 11 years ago when he said that thing about Donovan McNabb.
Oh, yeah.
Want to be on that poster. You know, so it puts him in a really, really bad position, man. So
it puts him in a Don Imus situation almost.
Yeah,
that was worse.
I hope there's something there internally. Where ESPN said, look, man, just for a little while, I got to remove you till this calms down. I hope it's one of those situations.
Oh, yeah, it comes down to corporate dollars, man.
Say again?
It comes down to corporate dollars, like you said, man. They probably pull them to the side, hey, man, let this storm blow over. Go on vacation real quick. We'll bring you back. No harm, no foul.
You know, chill in South Beach for a little while and you're good.
Chill in South Beach for a little while and just be out of sight because we work for the mouse over here. That's what it's all about. And the mouse is friggin' large. The mouse owns ESPN, which means the mouse owns you. They own NBC. I mean, I'm sorry, ABC.
Exactly.
The mouse owns I think the mouse owns part of Viacom, if I'm not mistaken. The mouse
they
is
do.
Large. The mouse is huge. So, hey, you work for Mickey, babe. And as long as you're in Disneyland, You gotta act accordingly. But why did you ask me to act? Why did you ask my opinion if you didn't want me to give it correctly?
Well, it's the same way as how people got on Tony Dungy. Was it Tony Dungy or was it?
Well,
last week.
Yeah, when they were talking about the gay kid. And you know, he said that he probably wouldn't have drafted him because he doesn't want all that distraction. And the thing is, like, what was wrong with what he said? It's like, yes, there is distraction. The distraction is not the fact that he's gay. The distraction is that people are making a big deal because that he's gay. That's the problem.
Here we go with sensitivity again. And Tony Dungy was 1,000% right. I don't care what we see on the TV or what kind of public acceptance, old boy got at the ESPY Awards, which took too long with that damn, like he was some kind of freaking hero, you know. You know, I'm gay. I was mad enough to come out. So he got a fucking award for it. A standing ovation from Jason Collins and all these other fools. And I'm looking at that, and like, and I'm looking at that, and I'm saying, do you see all this pussy in this room? It's ridiculous. Charlotte Dickens was sitting right there. You know, one of the Williams sisters was there. the skier, I forgot her name, from the Olympics, she was there. You had Danica Patrick was there. You know, that's heroic. And let's talk truth to power, man. You know, you're talking about a 44-man roster. All you know, a locker room like that is full of testosterone and anger, especially if you lose a game. And look at the division shit he made the club. He hasn't made the club yet, so hold on. And you know he's going to because it's going to be
great publicity.
Yeah. Now, and see, because I go a little bit further to this. I don't know if you guys thought about this, but you know, he's going to be on a ramp. Okay, tough division. He's got to deal twice a year, two games each, with Seattle, San Francisco, and Arizona. Those are the rivals in that division. The motherfuckers are going to call him out sooner or later. He's going to be tested. They're going to press his butt. And yes, that's a hell of a locker room that the Rams got over there too. And some of these guys are not going to take to that shit either. That's testosterone, that's anger, that's competitive nature.
The hostility.
Yes. Every one of these guys are beasting right now.
Yep.
And if you know anything, which I know you guys do, I know I'm preaching to the choir, I know this is not the football forum, but if you know anything about sports and locker room, you know darn well that they're not going to be singing Kumbaya in that motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yes, what Mr. Dungy said was absolutely correct. It was on point. And what's the problem with it? Because he said it?
Well, it got on him, and it was unfair because of his Christian views. And that's the thing about if you're a Christian, it's kind of hard to, like, hey, man, they're always going to pull that Christian angle on you. And they kind of got him on about that. It was unfair, but he was speaking the truth, though. So.
Right, and but you see, the thing is that, you know, it's really sad when the first time somebody, you know, when somebody has a negative opinion of you and they preface it with, I'm a Christian, it's almost like saying, like, okay, because you say you're a Christian, you can say whatever the hell you want. But in this case, he prefaced the fact that he is a Christian and he believes A, B, and C. And
right.
Unfortunately, you know, for old boy, this becomes an issue for him. This becomes a conflict of interest. It doesn't mean that he hates you. It doesn't mean that he, you know, that he'll never talk to you. You know, because, you know, another part of the Christian values, of course, is, you know, you don't judge anybody and things of that sort. But he was asked a professional football opinion because he is a championship winning football coach.
Right. Right.
And he gave his honest opinion, and then they went in deeper and further, and then they found out, you know, they came out with the Christian values thing, and then all of a sudden they put Christian values plus no gay. I would have picked the gay guy to Tony Dungy is a gay basher.
Right.
Which is not fair.
Of course not.
But
it's great news.
Oh, it's great news. It sells a lot of magazine covers and newspapers.
Jersey.
That's right.
Tickets.
That's exactly what it is. See, now that's where, and see, it's a slippery slope, man. You know, they have this thing, like Marshawn Lynch. Okay, he doesn't like to talk to the press. He doesn't like to deal with any press. But now he's holding out. And whatever situation he has, that's pretty much between him and the club on the Seahawks. And during whatever it was today, I was looking at the inside. What was it? The NFL Network, and they were going to each training camp, you know, throughout the NFL. And all of Pete Carroll's questions were about Lynch. And one of the questions was, hey, this guy, do you think he'll be able to talk to us this year? Because he totally dissed us last year. And Carroll was like, hey, I'm not really at liberty to answer that question. Well, you should be, you know. And this is what the power of the media has done over the years. You know, basically, if you really think about it and take a good look, ESPN is kind of like the Fox News of sports sometimes, too. They rehash that whole lot of stuff. Like, when I was a kid, I used to read Marvel Comics. And they used to have... And I used to always wait every month for the new edition of The Amazing Spider-Man. But they also used to have Spider-Man Spectacular, Spider-Man's Double Feature, Spider-Man versus the Human Torch, Spider-Man, you know, past episodes 3-for-1, their bargain price. And they market you and throw a whole bunch of shit at you so you buy more and more comic books because you don't want to be left out around your buddies. You're talking about, hey, man, I don't have that one. You want to be the man with all of them. That's part of the lure of it, you know, like baseball cards. Well, your fans like that, too, you know. They have they run SportsCenter 15, 16 times in a row in the morning. Then they have the ESPN News, which is the same formula, the same sports information over and over again, waiting for something to break, which it never does. Then you got... The Sports Nation, you know, then you got something else. And what they want to do is they want to inundate you, control the wave, and they get this blessing from Disney. So there, and they got the three different ESPN radio stations. And I forgot, you also have ESPN Deportes, which is Spanish speaking. So what they want to do is they want to control the market, and they do it by throwing the same shit at you all day long. So all of a sudden, Tony Dungy's looks like a friggin' pariah to you after a while, because they're all going to report the same way at the same time, and then on sports radio, they're going to mesh this shit out over an hour. You want to hear about the fucking Yankees, instead you're getting Tony Dungy shit and Ray Rice and all this other stuff. So it's nonsense. So you sort of almost got to – it's like when I was a kid, when my grandmother would say, open up the bag of beans, and you had to pick out the rocks before you actually got the real beans and put them in a box of soap. That's what it's like. That's what this is like to me. So it's just big. So you almost got to take this shit with a grain of salt, man. You know, it's unfortunate, but that's the world we live in now, man.
It sucks.
All I want to do is hear what's going on
in
Knicks camp.
Yeah, not a whole lot. Yeah. What's your thoughts as far as all this Knicks stuff with the trade rumors and all that? Never got your perspective, bro. I mean, we were talking about that earlier, and you know, I love the chat. You know, as far as the Stephen A. Smith, Ray Rice, Tony Dungy, man, I like this conversation, man. It needs to be had.
Definitely needs to be had, and you know, if any of them are listening, I mean, I hope to God that they are. But if they are, yeah, Stephen A. Smith, I'm behind you, Brossman. It's like, it's bullshit, straight up and down.
It is, man. It is. Look, I just want to see the Knicks.
We got about 90 more days before that happens, my friend.
That's all I care about. I want to know what kind of plan is being put in place, what kind of diabolical plan is being put in place by the Zens from the West. That's all. That's all I want to see. I want to know what kind of system has been bought into, which I believe is a hot system. It's nice. I hope it lasted at least 60-something games, you know. But I'm afraid Scott might not be here with us. I understand he's getting shot. Amari, he's getting shopped around a lot. I'm looking at that right now.
Right. We were discussing earlier the rejected deal that was proposed by Phil Jackson to the Minnesota Timberwolves. Amari Stoudemire, Iman Shumpert, and Tim Hardaway Jr. for Kevin Love. That was rejected.
Well, we need some see, the problem with that. Who rejected that one?
Flip Saunders.
That's Saunders is pretty stupid. I would have taken it.
You would have taken that over the Cleveland deal or the Golden State deal or the Chicago deal?
You have to review the deals with me, man. I've been on anesthesia for a week, so.
All right, no problem. Cleveland is offering a package of Anthony Bennett, Andrew Wiggins, and a first-round pick. So, essence, you're talking about the last two number one overall picks of the last two drafts and another draft pick.
I would take that deal.
Chicago is offering Taj Gibson, Jimmy Butler, the European star Mirotić, I can't remember his first name, and another first round pick.
Wow,
I
would be taking that too because Chicago. See the X factor in that deal is Rose. What kind of Rose are you going to get?
Well, if you've been looking on social media and you know how everybody's raving about it, apparently you're going to get the old Rose.
Well, I saw him at the whatever trials these are. What are these USA trials?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He looks okay, but he's lost a step or two.
He's rusty.
Yeah, he's lost a step, and that's okay. But if they're going to get him, and they think they can win with just him, Gasol, Noah, the other guy that they have there,
Gibson?
What's his name?
Taj Gibson?
No, Gibson. No, that's right. Taj would be there. Who would run with him in the backcourt?
That'd be a good question. Dunleavy?
Is he not on the team no more? Is he still in there? Kurt Heinrich.
Heinrich's still there.
He's
the liability defensively.
McDermott's on there, right?
I don't know about that deal. I'm a little iffy on that one. And so the third deal is what? What did the Knicks offer?
Well, the Knicks offered Stoudemire, Shumpert, and Hardaway. Golden State offered Klay Thompson, Harrison Barnes, David Lee, and maybe one other piece for Kevin Love, and that deal went sour at some point because I think they were trying to hold out on Klay Thompson, but they apparently have added it in there, but now I don't know. It looks like Minnesota's at a standstill, and I think it's because Flip Saunders probably feels that if anybody can convince Love to stay, it'd be him.
If my memory serves me correctly, Kevin Love is very unhappy in coal-ass Minnesota.
Yes, he is.
He is the nephew of a beach boy.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yes. He's Mike Love's nephew.
Okay.
Okay. He's an Oregon / Southern California kid.
Right.
That
we knew.
He has never made the playoffs, but I tell you something about his game. Anybody would want it. And I think the biggest stupid asses in this, out of all the things that you've mentioned, I think those are some crazy ass trades. I'd be pissed if he came here we at least have to hold on to Hardaway, man. But you know, Cleveland really should have made, they should have pulled the trigger. They should have pulled the trigger with Cleveland. And you know what? Cleveland could have added a number one draft choice and they wouldn't have been hurt because the king is over there.
Right.
I don't know what happened there. But I don't know, man. Kevin Love's unhappy, dude. I mean, you know, the guy's a 25-12 dude. He has really no flaws in his game. He'd make any offense and defense, for that matter, happy as long as it's championship caliber, which it is over here. I'm just going to look in the blue. Sorry.
Well, hold on. Let's not say his defense is that great because he is, you know.
Wait a minute. He has. Who's been his defensive coaches?
Okay. Fair enough.
He's been his head coach. Mm-hmm. He's never made the playoffs. That's 7 years is too long to be watching somebody else. He can't be watching that shit like we watch it.
Good point.
You know, after a while, you know, what happens when you go to... And that's another thing. They made mention of the fact that he wasn't at the USA trials yesterday. Right.
Right. He withdrew his candidacy for the team just because he doesn't know because of the uncertainty of issues with him and the Timberwolves. He doesn't know where he's going to go, so he doesn't want to go and join the team. And then somehow within the next month, he gets traded, and then he becomes a distraction.
I can see a little bit where that could be misinterpreted as being soft, but my little take on it, being that I know Kevin Love is a competitive dude, is, okay, it's already a distraction in the media, but damn, you don't want to sit in the locker room and have the rest of the guys asking you this shit, too. You know, that's a bitch. Yo, man, so what you going to do? You going to stay here? We won a ring last year, man. We went deep in the playoffs, man.
Especially when you look at that USA team squad and you look at them, and a lot of them are either going to be your future teammates, your prospective teammates, or your former teammates. I mean, that becomes an issue because, you know, you never know which guys are going to try to, you know, do a side recruiting a little bit. You know, if Melo goes, you know, joins Team USA, imagine if he's like, come on, Love, come on, dog, come to New York. You know, then LeBron says, man, tell Melo to shut up, come to Cleveland. You know, stuff like that, well, you know, it's bound to happen. They'll probably be joking around. But then, you know, that one night, they'll probably sit him down and say, all right, let's talk serious now. How do you look at my team and, you know, and where do you see us going? Would you be interested?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if the veterans, the fellow all-star veterans, like the guys you just mentioned, if they step to him and they say, look, man, you want to play basketball, you want to eat and play basketball.
Yep.
And eventually he's going to want. It's sort of like what it's been my considered opinion. It's a slight change of subject. It was my considered opinion that we dodged the bullet. We dodged the bullet this summer, man. I'm pretty sure that if Chris Bosh had signed with Houston, we would have saw something else.
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
And that's scary. And that kind of talk there, if Melo could have been swayed by something like that, you know that Kevin Love is catching big hell from it.
Well, actually, I don't know if you guys have seen this on the internet. I just saw a little while ago, Pat Riley apparently did call Leon Rose and, you know, ask about Carmelo a couple of days before Melo finally made his decision. But that was right after, you know, within like a day or two after of, you know, LeBron announcing his. Once he knew LeBron was leaving, you know, he called to see if Carmelo was interested. And, of course, you know, Melo decided to stay with us, luckily. But Riles was, you know, he was trying.
Pat the rat.
Right. Wow. Wow.
Hey, Chris, I got a question for you, though.
Who's this? For who?
I got a question for you, man. Me and Angel were talking about it earlier, man. There's a lot of jam at the shooting guard position, man. Who are you willing to trade? Who are you willing to start? Who are you willing to come off the bench, man? What's the story? What's your point of view with the shooting guard position?
I missed what you said, man.
Who do you want as a two guard, basically? Because since we have, you know, we have Shumpert, we have Tim Hardaway Jr., we have J.R. Smith. Who do you want to stay? Who do you want to go? Who do you want to start? Who do you want to call off the bench? You know, we have this.
You had to do this to me, fellas, huh?
You've been gone for a couple of weeks, so we have to.
Of course.
Okay.
You owe us this, dog.
All right. Let me see. Okay. In the middle, we're going to have to go with Shumpert for now. I mean, I'm sorry. Back up. That's not Shumpert. Dallenberg, sorry, for now. Just because of experience, defense, and his willingness to pick up systems really quickly, you know.
All right, but what about the two guard?
That's him. I'm trying to save that one, man.
Oh, crap.
Okay.
The suspense is killing me.
I know. At the four, I'm going to hopefully, and I hope I'm right with this, I know you guys are going to laugh, but I want to put Melo there for now.
No, that's not a bad idea.
I'll explain later. I want Hardaway to show up as small. Two guard, well, point guard is Calderon right away. Put him right there. And this might surprise you, but I would want Shumpert at my two.
Wow.
Yes. Now, let me explain my lineup for you. Now that a certain person has left Miami and showed up in Cleveland, and now that the Brooklyn Nets are on a slow, steady goddamn decline, I think. That's just me.
I don't know about
that,
slow.
Now that Indiana, if you like, okay, shit, how do you say this? You know what? I just thought about something. I forgot about the power shift as far as improvement, rather, with Toronto and Washington. So I have to change my whole method here now all of a sudden.
Uh-oh.
Because Washington has really improved.
Right.
And they're quick. They have a three-headed backcourt that's quick as shit. And they have a hell of a formidable down-low unit, man, with Nene, Gortat, and I'm missing somebody that they just acquired. Somebody just joined them.
Like, yeah, I looked at it real quick.
I can't remember. So, you know what? So right now, I would want... See, Amari's great off the bench. He would be great off the bench. And J.R. Smith has always been good off the bench. Right, you know, that last 3 minutes of the first quarter, first 3 minutes of the second type of guy. And that's what Phil likes to do. He likes to give you different looks around. Well, sorry, I'm saying Phil. I know.
And Chris Allen's DeJuan Blair. So yeah.
Yeah. See, that's oof. I don't know what to say, man. That puts a little crank in everything for me.
Okay.
Because we don't have our front line. See, I'm a little confused. Maybe that's not a good question for me right now. Because are we going to keep Aldridge?
Probably.
And what about we picked up somebody else too.
Jason Smith.
Yeah, what's the status on his ankle, man?
They haven't mentioned anything about it so far. So far, he's ready to go.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would assume Phil would not break.
I don't understand either. Is Kenyon Martin still on the fucking team?
No.
Wayne Ellington,
no.
Are they going to keep him? You know,
probably
we
not.
Earlier, is he going to get any run time? Then you got Bargnani, who can run, who can really work in his system, but weak rebounder, man. So I don't know, man. Right now, my ideal—you just asked me what my ideal was—that would be it, man. Because I think at power forward, Anthony gave everybody the league fit last year, everybody, because they didn't know what to, you know, and that was under Woodson. You know, when you have a system like this where there's constant movement and of course, you know, Carmelo and J.R. Smith, they don't need a lot of setup time. They can just, you know, they can put it right up wherever they are. You know, that can cause problems for defenses. So I kind of like, I got to see the system in the preseason game or something, man. You know, so I can't really answer that right now. There's so many ifs and variables now that I think about it, because other teams have improved in that division. Conference. But I'll tell you one thing I did learn when I was looking at the training camp, man. I think we need to keep, I don't know if he's going to stick, but I think we need to keep Shane Larkin.
Yeah, definitely.
I really like this kid. I think he brings something, a certain little quiet, little cute, little toughness, if you will, to Madison Square Garden's floor, man. And I think he'd be a good backup for Calderon. And I didn't know the little guy could play defense, man. I didn't know he had that. That helps. So.
You like him in front of Frigioni?
Not yet. We have to wait and see that. Frigioni doesn't make any mistakes, though. That's why I like him. He's got solid, steady type shit. type of ball player. Him teaming up with Calderon is going to give people fits in the East. I like that. But when you play a team like Washington, you're going to get beat down because these guys are liabilities defensively.
Yeah.
You know, Wall's probably the fastest guard in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
And Beal is getting better as we speak. You know, he's improving as we go. We don't have any lockdown defensive guys in the backcourt that I see, you know. And I don't even know. I don't like you said before. I don't know if they're going to keep Ellington, man. And I don't even know what he consists of defensively, anyhow. But J.R. Smith, he has ups and downs back there. You know, he can play points sometimes, and he can't be relied on upon to do that. You know, Pablo's great offensively, and so is Calderon. But defensively, I don't know. So I don't know what we're going to do, man. I really don't. I don't know what we're going to do. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Your Honor. I have to take the fifth on that.
Objection sustained.
But this Jason Smith, man, I hope he makes the squad, too. We need his body badly. You know. Well, Kendall Bird has a history of injuries as well. But you know what? I think he'd be just, you know, as formidable as, say, Tyson Chandler. You know, and that would work out pretty good. I don't know what we're going to do, man. I just want to see what they have in store. I mean, I know they're being evaluated every friggin' as we speak right now. I know Derek Fish is putting in, you know, 14, 15-hour days upstairs. And just to be down to 11 to 12 players, man. And so, I don't know what we're going to – I don't know what's going on, you know. And nobody.
Yes.
You're good.
No. Go ahead. I was going to say, man, you're right, man. We don't know what's going to happen. We're just, all of this is speculation. I mean, we're like in the middle of, you know, nowhere zone as far as the NBA, man. So it's just a wait and see game until, like, you know, till October, even before any more transactions hit. So we were just kind of talking about general NBA stuff earlier today. You know, we were talking about that Christmas game that they're going to do this year. I mean, it's going to be six of them. Yeah.
Boy.
What's your thoughts about that?
Look at the way they hooked that up. Oh, Adam Silver, man, he's something else. that's fantastic, man. Now, is that going to be the return to Cleveland? I mean, to Miami for LeBron?
Yes. Yep.
Wow.
I know they have a couple of preseason games against each other, but they're not going to play, you know what I'm saying, play against each other. I mean, preseason, I think the games are, like, overseas somewhere, like in South America. But that had to be their first game as far as, from a rating standpoint on Christmas. You can't.
Excellent.
That's great ratings right there. That's big.
Yes, it is.
You know, we already know the Knicks are playing on Christmas. My guess would be...
Who are they playing?
Schedule's not out yet.
You haven't found that out. But if I had to pick up an opponent, I would either go Brooklyn or Chicago.
Yeah. Yep. And you'd be right on that.
We played Brooklyn last year, right?
You need a superstar.
No, we played the Thunder last year.
Oh, yeah, you did. Look at that. That was last year, 2 years ago. Okay,
right.
That was last year?
2 years ago, we played the Lakers.
Yeah.
That was the Felton game. Okay. You're right. So last year, yeah, because Melvin wasn't playing. That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they're going to do yet, man. You know, this is the first time in a long time I have no anticipation of what's going to go on with the Knicks, man. Not at all. I mean, shoot. This team is, you know, there was I did when I was in college, man. My thesis was on the Knicks. You know that?
Seriously?
I sure did. I wrote on the Knicks in 25 pages.
Damn! You have to send me a copy of that.
You know what? I wonder if I do. I have it somewhere. I live and die with these fucking team, man.
Obviously.
You know, I mean, shoot, they're like that uncle that you'd rather hear his stories than your own father's.
Right.
They're They're like that family member who you just can't wait till the summertime comes so you can go over to their house and stay there and, you know, pick up all the information for life's lessons and just general growth, you know. They're that guy to me, you know, or lady, whatever you want to call it, you know. But fellas, the only thing you always got to remember about this team, though, and I'm going to say this one, because people normally don't get it, but the only thing that you need to know about the Knicks is that there's never been anything wrong with the Knicks except for bad management. That's all that's ever always been with this team. That's what's always killed this team. They've been around for 66 years. They've only won 2 championships in this freaking market. You know.
Unbelievable.
And that's what's wrong with them. It's just they were treated since what? Since World War II, like friggin' stepchildren, man. And you know, in this market. So you know, it's I guess it's a hard habit to break for the powers that be, if you will. You know, every time they start to get somewhere, you know, which definitely is two eras that I can think of, the early 70s and the mid 90s, something else brings them back, and that's always bad management. Or ownership, I should say. Always. So that's the only thing wrong with the Knicks, man. You know, the Isaiah Thomas years, you know, some of the late Knicks, the Gulf and Western years, you know, those were the bad years. You know, I mean, bad times, and they weren't taken care of as a franchise, you see. So the rivalries with Brooklyn Boston are few and far between. The thing with the Knicks really never materialized yet. The thing with Chicago Bulls is really cool. That's a good part of New York history, you know, the mid-90s.
Right.
As is the Miami Heat's history with them, and even in the Indiana's in '93 when they, you
actually, Chris, that actually brings up an old topic that Steve and I were talking about. It's like we were talking about which teams do we hate the most.
Oh, I can answer that one. That's easy. That's five. Boston, Nets, Bulls, Heat, and Pacers. That's it.
In that order, or that's just five.
Just no. That's just if you're talking rivalries,
yeah,
that's the only five you need to be concerned with. You know, I'm not talking about the fights, the brawls we've had with other teams when 10 years ago when Melo went off and he had that fight with that one dude
at the
Nuggets. I'm not talking about that. That's a small one. I'm not talking about when I was a kid when Willis Reed tried to fight the entire Atlanta Hawks bench. I'm not talking about that. You're talking rivalry. There's only five teams that matter. That's the Celtics, and I can say it all day. It's the Celtics, the Nets, the Bulls, the Heat, and the Pacers. That's it.
Hey, guys, real quick, breaking news off of ESPN. The Cavaliers are only team presently engaged in serious talks with the Timberwolves for Kevin Love.
Now,
according to Mark Stein and Brian Windhorst.
Yeah, I know.
They reportedly offered the number one draft pick overall, Andrew Wiggins, and deal for Love, but Wiggins cannot be traded until August 23rd after signing his rookie contract last week.
Yeah, I was going to say that. He can't be traded for a month. So it could have happened until, like, almost closer to Labor Day. So
they want that idea.
Okay. Well, that's it. I hate the Heat, man. And I've been on record a million times saying that. I hate the Heat. It's got so bad with them. They're, like, right behind the Red Sox and Cowboys. It's that bad.
Oh, don't get me started on those two.
Look, you know what, man? The problem with the Heat, I'm going to tell you what. No, Andrew, let me put it to you this way. Our issues with the Heat go back to, here we go again. You're always going to hear me say this.
Bad rally.
Yep.
Bad friggin' management. there would, you know what kind of wonderful, look, do you know what kind of, oh, God, I think we would have hung at least two more flags up in MSG if they had given Riley 3% ownership, just 3%. I mean, goddamn, he has 7% in Miami, and they're winning. They won the finals the last 4 years. You know, all you had to do was put him in charge of basketball operations, and watch what would have happened. Watch what would have happened. You know?
Mm-hmm.
We do stupid shit, too, man. When Riley resigned, what do we do? Turn around and got Don Nelson. For what?
So we can fire him in mid-January and then just replace him with Jeff Van Gundy.
Right. Who should have been... You know what? Truth be told, if you gave Riley what he wanted, let's see. What did we do? We gave Allen Houston $100 million 2 years later. No, one, two, three. About 3 years later. Is that 3 years later?
It's about 4 years later, actually.
4 years later. We gave Larry Johnson a stupid amount of money, too, because after he left, we were still paying him for another 3 or 4 years.
Right.
You also, I don't care what you thought about him, but Ewing should have died here. Okay? There's certain things you just don't do. And the reason that these things happen is, again, bad management. We've always had bad friggin' management, starting from 1948 to 1976 when the Irish family owned the team. Because they were their interest was the circus, it wasn't the dog show, it wasn't the Knicks. You know, because you got to remember, college basketball was king in New York. Fuck the Knicks.
NIT.
It was all about the ECAC tournament, the two NIT tournaments, the one in when all everybody from up in Boston, everybody used to come down. I forgot what that's called. That was another tournament. You know. That's what was happening in MSG. In fact, we used to have another a little gym next to Madison Square Garden called the Felt Forum. And they had some really good Golden Globe and college basketball games there, some classics.
Right.
So that was king. That was king. And then in 77 to about, I think maybe 94, Gulf of Western took over, and they didn't give a shit about basketball. At all. They put Dave Checkets in charge of basketball operations, and he didn't know how to really build a team. You know, he didn't really know what to do with what he had. But the smart thing he did was he was the one reluctantly that had to go ahead and reach out and get Pat Riley away from NBC. See, Rick Pitino left here because of Dave Checkets. People don't know that.
I know that.
Yeah, you know, Rick Pitino said, "I'm not going to listen to this punk ass bitch. He don't know nothing about basketball." and what did they do? They hired Stu Jackson, who's the who works for the NBA, to come in here. Yeah. And he hated. I can't go on to that. Let me move past that. And then he went to John McLeod, and it was just a mess, man. And Ewing was getting ruined at that period.
Yeah.
And that's why the Pat Riley hiring was the best situation we ever had. And for that lasted, what, 5 seasons?
Give or take.
Yeah.
We should have kept him. We should have kept him. He didn't want to leave. But if you have bad management dictating you and telling you how to run your basketball team, hey, you know?
Right.
Now, did he fuck up sometime? Yeah, he should have been starched in the seventh game. The finals. You know, Dust is what, 2-for-19 or some shit?
2-for-23.
See, and Rolando Blackman, he didn't play him at all. And Hubert Davis was there. You should have played those guys. You know, you should have played those guys. Should have played those guys. I, to this day, I cringe at that thought. But he wanted to do what he wanted to do. He didn't want anybody to tell him, so he. That was sort of a dark moment. But you know what? next year they won 55 games, or give or take, something like that. Then they played the Pacers again, and that was that friggin' last finger roll that Ewing did.
He should have dunked.
It seems like right after that, Riley was gone. And he didn't want to hear it. And after that, it went downhill from there to a certain degree. You know, thank goodness Van Gundy knew how to coach.
Thank God.
Yeah. But I live and die with them fuckers, man. You know, I bleed blue and orange, but I want to see these motherfuckers just recap.
Win once. Just win
this
one.
I think we will, though. We will.
I think we're on the road to that right now. It's gonna be somewhere in the next three seasons, I think we'll be back. We've got some money concerns and some molding to do, meaning, you know, you got to get these players used to this difficult climate. It's not easy all the time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, another thing that I thought Riley didn't do a good job of was he couldn't stand Marquette. Everybody knows that now, but at the time, it was a kind of a shock, you know?
Right.
He couldn't stand him. And what did he trade him for? Charles Smith, who I'm not going to go into that. Doc Rivers,
sure.
Who was at the end of his career. And Bo Kimble, who I can't remember ever doing anything in a Knicks uniform.
Well, Bo Kimble, right?
Yeah. He got traded for three guys. And I can't remember him. And Orlando Blackley came over from Dallas, I think.
Dallas Mavericks, yep.
Yeah.
Well, then, because right after that, he got Derek Harper.
Right?
Yeah. And you know what? And I remember... No? Wait a minute.
Yeah, we had Derek Harper, boss.
Yeah, we did. But did he get traded here?
Yeah.
I think he
did. Yeah, he got traded.
Who did we lose? I know Doc got hurt, and we got him immediately. It was a midseason, but I don't remember who he got traded for.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember. That's not important.
Wasn't it Anthony Bonner?
No.
No.
I don't know. I don't remember. It's not even important. Although this is going to bother me, and I know 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm going to wake up and say, what the fuck did we...
Because then he come in, because he, when the Knicks got Doc Rivers,
right.
Doc Rivers got injured for the season. That's when they went in,
right.
Out and traded for him, right?
Right. But I thought Harper was traded for. So
I don't think so. I think Doc was sidelined because I don't remember Doc on the Mavericks. I don't remember that.
Well, no,
right.
No. He's saying that he's trying to remember how did we end up getting Harper.
Yeah, how did we get Harper? I can't remember. But I know he. Okay, yeah, you're right. He did get traded. Yeah. He traded somebody for him. Yeah, but that's either here or there.
You know who? You remember Tony Campbell?
I remember him.
I think he was a part of that trade. I think he was part of that trade.
Yeah.
I
see. Wow. Okay.
I don't remember.
All right.
It was a while ago, man. That's 20 years ago.
Yeah, we're talking 20 years now.
I know.
Damn, now I'm an old head. Shit.
Remember, Derek, he didn't really fit in right away, man. The media kind of got on him. He wasn't really in the zone, but they loved his tenacity, man.
You know what?
That was a great back.
The reason I brought all of that up, because I think, seriously, we got cheated in the 97 season.
97.
When the Miami Heat got...
That's right. I think that was the team.
Oh, I tell anybody who will listen to me. It's like in 97, it's like there is no way in hell from 97 to 2001 was the Miami Heat ever better than us.
No.
Ever.
But that was the team that was best suited to beat the Bulls. That team.
It sure was.
Yeah, it was, because they beat them twice already.
That's right. That particular team. That was a team. What did you have? Larry Johnson, Allen Houston. Who got thrown out of the? Who got suspended? It was
Charlie Ward, Patrick Ewing, Larry Johnson, John Starks,
yeah.
And for them it was PJ Brown.
Yeah. But wait a minute. We lost Charlie Ward for both of those games, didn't we?
Yeah. Charlie, since Charlie was the one in the fight, he got suspended for two games, while Patrick got suspended for game six, and so did
Houston.
So did Houston. No, Houston was suspended. I think it was somebody else. But in game seven, Larry got suspended. Starks was suspended. And maybe one other person.
Houston was suspended. I'm pretty sure Houston was suspended with that. With
you might be right. You might be right, but
But that particular team, the 97 Knicks,
yeah,
that particular team was best suited to defeat the Bulls. That was the best. And the Bulls went on to win the championship, and they were defending champions that year.
Well, if you remember, that was the same team.
Was best suited, and I tell you right now, if we had gotten by the Bulls, which I think we would have reached, I'm pretty sure we would have.
I would have said they would have gone six.
Year, talking about that year, I'm not talking about four, you know, like the 96 Bulls were incredible, you know. But the 97 Bulls were a little bit different. They had issues. Bill Cartwright was ineffective for them after a while during the playoffs. And I was never worried about Rodney. Scotty did not have a good finals, he didn't have a good conference conference finals or NBA finals.
No, he was having a horrible playoffs.
That's right, horrible playoffs, and that was the flu season for Michael. Am I right?
Yes.
That was the best time that they had to win, and they knew it. The Knicks. I'm saying, they knew it. And let me tell you something. Should they have gotten by the Bulls, which I think they would have? There ain't no way in hell that Utah would have beat us. No. Just throw that shit right out in the trash can.
Too much size.
Too much size, too much tenacity.
This is
too much veteran. Utah
couldn't handle. They wouldn't be able to handle Johnson, Oakley, and Ewing at the same time.
Absolutely. That's right. And, you know, Oakley was ready for Karl Malone.
Oh, no, he owns Karl Malone.
That's right.
Malone scared his ass.
That's right. And Starks was on that team, too.
Yeah.
And
Houston.
It would have been beautiful. That was the team that really, oh, God. You don't have no, that was one of those, I think I've done it four times. That was one of the moments that brought tears to my eyes when those fuckers were suspended and I lost that series to the Heat.
Oh, yeah, that definitely made me cry. I was so, but it wasn't like the, you know, like that disappointed cry. That was like that angry cry. Like you were like, don't touch me, man. Don't touch me. You know, that kind of cry.
Yeah, the girl I was with, she was like, so are we going? I said, get out of here. I couldn't handle it. That was really, really bad. That's the one. Let me tell you something. I know you guys are a hell of a lot younger than me, but let me tell you something. That happened before. When we were defending champions, we played in 71.
Yeah.
We lost the the seventh game at Madison Square Garden. And when the Busher fouled out with 2 minutes left, the Bullets had a field day. One of the guys that killed us was Earl the Pearl. And I remember weeping. 11-year-old tears, dude. You hear me? Boo-hooing. Like somebody stole my bike or some shit. Just crying. And somebody said to me, man, they'll win next year, man. Don't even worry about it. And they went to the finals the next year. And they lost, but they won the next year after that. And I remember saying that, see, we could have got 3 out of 4. And I said, Dad, this is going to be great. Cause we got Monroe and Frazier, and then they added, I don't know if you remember these names, Spencer Haywood and Bob McAdoo and these guys, man. And those guys didn't do nothing for us. McAdoo, you might look in a record book, you'll see that he averaged 26 points a game for the Knicks. But you know what? Dude didn't play any kind of defense. Or as Clyde Frazier has this term, he plays Matador defense. Where you let the Bulls go by? Well, and I remember saying that we'll never get back to where we need to be, you know, but we finally did during the 90s, and I thought this was going to be a long era, and it broke my heart again. And all you got to do, all you got to do is just remember, it's always been management's fault, because they don't pay attention to what we're doing, you know, I mean, what the team should be doing. And the same stuff where it goes for the Rangers, too. It's the same thing, you know. We had, Viacom was one of our, let me see. What did he do? It was Gulf and Western for up to then. Then Paramount Communications, I think they were. Or then with Viacom. I forgot who it was. But they were like co-owners of Madison Square Garden at the time that Riley was our coach. And those two organizations loved Pat Riley. And Checkets could not stand it. He hated that shit. You know? He hated that shit. That caused a big division. So then when IT&T brought the Knicks, well, those were Chuckie's boys. That's who we originally came from. You know, because they did a joint venture with Cablevision. And so Chuckie went upstairs to those fools, man, and winding and dining and talking some shit to them. And next thing you know, he had unlimited power to tell Riley everything, you know, and also they was going to buy into Riley's, because they weren't basketball fans, you know. He wasn't going to buy into Riley's fucking demands to get a little bit of ownership. So they said, let's get the fuck out of here. And then Cablevision bought us, and that was it, bro. Good night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, speaking of that.
I'm not going into that. So it's management, man. It's upstairs. Now, finally, we've got a good situation here. This might be the best where we... You know, we've had a lot of team presidents before. You know, we've had Grunwald got fired basically because of that shit bringing Bagnani over here. That's what the hell that happened there. But before that,
well, he was against it.
Donnie Walsh couldn't handle this. I mean, he couldn't handle that bullshit upstairs. And anything before that, you know, Grunfeld was good, but you know, again, it's pressure. But before that, Layden and Isaiah, Jesus. You know, so that's, you know, we've never had it steady until till this guy shows up, the Zen Master. And nobody's going to tell him what to do. He has complete, what they call in business, complete autonomy. And so I have a really good feeling about what we're going to do somewhere in the next two to three seasons. And I can be patient for this guy now. Because it's not really, even though I don't really know what the roster is looking like right now, that's okay to me. Because I know it's going to be taken care of. I know we got the right guy this time to handle business. This guy's going to be able to do that. This guy. He's going
to be okay. So what's your expectations first season in, man? I guess first round exit, second round?
I think we can realistically go second round. And then you're going to see some more changes made next season when we get some of this payroll money out the fucking way.
Oh, yeah.
You'll be seeing some characters come over this way. And you'll be seeing some adjustments, maybe not major adjustments in the roster, but two or three guys have to go. And if they can manage to hold on to a few players, like if Shumpert doesn't have to leave anywhere, if – I don't know about J.R. Smith, man. I don't know what guy I'm always getting with. You know, I don't know what's going on with him. He's so inconsistent, I can't get a read on his ass half the time. So I don't know what's going on there.
But, does he buy into the regime, though? Does he buy into the regime?
He claims he's going to right now, but that's just lip service.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't... Again, we're in the unknown, man. But I see Carmelo going back to actually stepping up to first team all NBA status. I see Tim Hardaway really, really coming of age this year.
Yes.
I also see Calderon having, barring injury, a damn good year. I see a lot of good. The unknown shit is what is the final roster going to look like?
That's been pretty much my like my biggest concern, you know, besides of what, you know, who's going to play the five, you know, what are they going to do with the two guards, what are they going to do with the, you know, at the bench. I mean, that's a scary thought, you know. And if, you know, if these reports are true that Love is going to Cleveland, you know, now you basically got to realize that you have to compete with that and, you know, what is going to be the Knicks' answer, because, you know, I don't think they'll have a problem, you know, too much of a problem winning the division, but trying to compete in the East, that's going to be a pain in the ass.
It is, particularly since a lot of teams have stayed steady and or even improved, for that matter.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, boy, you got a lot. You got a point. You know, if Love goes to Cleveland, here we go with another big three again. That's really just as threatening in the David Platt offense than it was in Miami. You know, I mean, you know, people forget that nobody's talking about Kyrie Irving's vast improvement every year he's been around. You know, and he's really going to show his ass now.
We kind of talked about that, I think, last week about John Wall, how he's considered one of the better point guards. He doesn't get the exposure, and Kyrie Irving, in my opinion, is kind of like in that same boat where he's not on national TV as like a Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook. But now, you know, with LeBron going back to Cleveland, you know, that exposure is going to be different for Kyrie Irving or John
Wall. Kyrie Irving's basketball IQ is probably better than John Wall's is. Wall is prone to make crazy decisions sometimes, like he did in the playoffs against Chicago, where he doesn't realize, he loses track of time, he doesn't understand the situations and stuff like that. Irving doesn't make those mistakes. He's more cerebral, you know. He's able to assess the situation better. And Deion Waiters is a damn good guard, by the way, offensively and defensively. They've got a team over there. They've got a team over there. And you know, I don't really trust their middle that much, but if you've got the explosive players, you know, and those four that we mentioned with Love joining the crew, you're not going to need that. You're not going to need a whole lot of you might need a lot of depth, but you might not need as much in the middle as you think you do. When these guys can spread the floor that way, LeBron makes everybody around him play better. Even if he makes the goddamn concession guys sell faster. You know what I mean?
Wow.
So it's a vast. That team all of a sudden goes from average, below average, to just powerhouse overnight if Love joins them. You know. Mm-hmm. And I also think that LeBron, and a side note, I think he left at the right time, man, because I really do think that D Wade's on is about to fade, man.
I think he was fading a long time ago, but
yeah, thank you. You took the words out of my mouth. I think he was fading for the last 3 years. He showed some flashes. Who doesn't if you're playing next to LBJ? But he's been fading. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. But not to us, I think we're going to be okay. I think this is probably going to be no more than a 2 or 3 year kind of project, but Jim Master will get it done.
Yeah, we got a minute left. I just want to quickly say I'm gonna get my quick point out. Maybe they need to consider a summer tournament. Like I heard about that. Maybe just that next show, NBA doing a summer tournament for this dead period. But you know, we'll talk about that next time. Any thoughts for you guys?
Summer tournament.
I never thought about it. A summer tournament, the NBA.
Well, that's what I saw last week in some articles. You know, Adam Silver was thinking about doing like a summer tournament, making the NBA all year round. If you want to catch the NFL, you're probably going to have to go that route.
Definitely.
Well, I thought that was what summer league was.
Well,
that's
no,
like a long weekend, 2 weeks, maybe at that.
I think they, you know, they should definitely consider it. If not, do like I know they have the FIBA World Cup, you know, World Championships and stuff. But you know, maybe do something more. I mean, because people, you know, love hoops, and you know, just like, you know, a lot of people love their football, and there's just way too much time in between, you know, the championship game and opening day again, and they need to fill that time up.
Yeah.
Yeah, 5 seconds. Anything else?
Blade Blue, no. Forever.
No, I just want to say it's been a pleasure. It's a pleasure to be back. It's a pleasure talking
welcome
to you.
Welcome back.
Again.
Welcome back, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you, my friend. And we're going to, and this is going to be a hell of a year.
Absolutely.
So that's what it is. So thank you very much, gentlemen.
All right,
have a good night, guys.
Have a good one, Blue Blue Show. Next Wednesday, Knicks. It's the Sunday Giants. And take care, everybody. Take care. Peace.
All right, Chief. Later.